It's Monday here on the North Shore Drive podcast. We are in the month of April, which means it's NFL draft month. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here on the North Shore Drive podcast, joined by Ray Fittipaldo of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We're going to be talking all things draft. Are the Steelers going to be trade day one movers, moving up or down in the first round, or staying pat? Who are their pre-draft visits, and what are their strongest positions? All that here and more on the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it. You are now listening to the North Shore Drive Podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter. Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Ray Fittipaldo, one of our great Steelers beat writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. As always, you can find this show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get our Monday, Wednesday, and Friday episode of the North Shore Drive podcast, as well as the daily content that comes out from all of our different sports writers, especially with Pirate season picking back up. We got a lot of great stuff coming from our Pirates guys and so many more things going on. As always, our show is sponsored by the great Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in Pittsburgh. You got to go to Mike's Beer Bar today to make sure that you go check out one of their 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. They also have amazing food options, over 20 televisions, and they just newly had a renovation. Be sure to get to Mike's Beer Bar. More on them later. Ray, now that we're in the draft month, we've been doing big boards. We've been doing mock drafts. You have another mock draft coming out this week. But now I think is the time when we start to get a little bit closer and we start to see, okay, the field is starting to get set. We're starting to see where all the team's positional needs are after free agency. We have a kind of a good feel for that. The question that I have to you is about the Steelers' potential for trading. Last year, they traded up to get Broderick Jones. They wanted to make sure they got their guy, and I'm pretty sure they did because Broderick Jones had a very good rookie season, at least in the 10 games that he started. Might have actually been 11, but still. That was a strong move, and they got a strong player here. Do you see the Steelers as more likely to be in on another trade up situation, or are they trading back, or do you think this is the year, another year where they stand pat at their 20th overall pick?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Chris, the most likely scenario is to stand pat. But if I had to pick one trade up or trade down, I think given the aggressiveness that Omar Khan and Andy Weidel have shown, really, since they've taken over, you look at last year, you mentioned it, they trade up to get Broderick Jones. Look at the aggressiveness they showed this offseason going after Patrick Queen and obviously Russell Wilson and Justin Fields too. So I think if they want a guy and they think they can go get their guy, I think they're going to do that. And one other reason I'll bring up, I think, you know, I don't know about you, Chris, but when Talias Fuaga, when it was reported that he was in a week or so ago, you see him in the top 10, you never see him out of the top 15. So I think the Steelers have to know if they're going to get him, they're probably going to have to move up at least five spots. You know, I don't really see him being a guy who's going to tumble given how solid he is. So yeah, maybe a draft up scenario a trade up scenario in this draft is maybe that's going to happen again.
Yeah. It seems like it might be on the table here because you look at the guys that are here, you know, everyone, you know, Joe Alt is the number one offensive lineman. He'll probably come off the board in the top 10. But then it's a little wishy-washy after that because some people have Fuaga as the second best tackle. Some people have him the third best tackle behind Olu Fashanu out of Penn State. And, you know, you look at Notre Dame, at Joe Alt and Olu Fashanu, neither of those guys have a top 30 visit. Have been brought in or the Steelers have gone and visited themselves, whether it was at the combine or anything like that. So it looks like that the Steelers are kind of assuming those guys won't be on the board and or anywhere in their range. But Fuaga is the highest, I think, is at least my highest rated tackle that they have, that they've made sure to bring in for a top 30 visit. They've talked to him at the Senior Bowl, so they've done that there. And I also think, just based off of my studying of tape, outside of Joe Alt, I do think Fuaga is the best run blocker of this class. He's 6'6". He's really strong. He gets out. He's really aggressive. And he could be that right tackle that allows Broderick Jones to move the left tackle. That makes and that's like a potential, like just based off of, you know, what we saw from Broderick Jones last year, what we've seen from Fuaga in college, that could make them one of the more physically dominant offensive tackle pairs in the NFL in the coming years as they continue to develop. I think that makes a lot of sense for what the Steelers are doing there. But I also think it's worth saying that, like, they've also put a considerable amount of time into investigating the other guys right behind Fuaga, at least like when you look at big boards, guys like Amarius Mims out of Georgia, guys like J.C. Latham out of Alabama. Both of them have spoken with the Steelers multiple times during the early part of the draft process here. That's why I wonder, is it more likely for them to trade up and go get Fuaga and say, hey, we're just getting our guy in the first round, or do they stay there, or is there the chance with the rush of quarterbacks that could happen, or a rush at wide receivers, that maybe Latham and Mims fall down and they're both available at 20 and they're saying, you know what, we're going to take our chances, trade back, maybe get an extra second, third round pick, and then try to use that to get some of these other positions, because we all know the Steelers, if they go OT in the first round, they're going to probably have to do something in the second round to go up and get one of their centers.
Yeah, there's always a calculus involved, Chris. So if, let's say, the price is too high and they can't trade up to get their guy, then maybe it comes around to be a number 20 and they sit there and they say, okay, listen, the guys we have ranked between 20 and 50, there's not a whole lot of difference. So let's go ahead. And like you said, let's get an extra second round pick or an extra third round pick and, you know, see if we can make it worthwhile and, you know, build some depth on this roster. So, yeah, I'm with you there. I think the Steelers' history, if you look at it with both, you know, Kevin Colbert and Omar Khan, I think a trade up scenario is more likely than a trade down in the first round. If you just look at what they've done over the years, you know, Santonio Holmes, Troy Polamalu last year, obviously. So, you know, I think it's more likely that they want to go get their guy, you know, rather than trade down. But that's always a possibility if they have guys who are closely ranked, bunched up there, you know, between their first pick and their second round pick.
I'll also ask you this, because we strictly stuck to offensive tackle. I think there might be some people out there that are saying, well, wait a second, what if like Quinyon Mitchell is there, or I don't know, like Ladd McConkey or Roma Dunes, you know, who they talked to at the draft. What if they want to make a move for a corner or a wide receiver? And then, so there's some people probably saying, like, what about center? Are they still going to address that, and they could get Jackson Powers Johnson. Do you see them potentially making a move up for either like a guy like O'Dunes, or a guy like a Quinyon Mitchell or Terrion Arnold at either of those positions? Or is offensive tackle kind of just strictly where we're sticking at right now as far as our evaluation of the Steelers?
Yeah, I mean, listen, Fuaga, you're talking about moving up from 20 to 15, say, right? Okay, but for Odunze, Chris, I've never seen him fall outside of the top 10 in any of these big boards or any of these mock drafts. Now, listen, that could happen. You know, something strange could happen on draft day. But, I just don't think the draft capital that would be needed to trade up 10 spots. I mean, you know what it is, because they did it just 5 years ago for Devin Bush. What did they had to trade away their one and their two, correct?
I think a 1-2. Was it a 1-2 and a 3?
I think so, yeah. I thought it was pretty expensive. So when you look at it you know, from that perspective, it's not something that I think is feasible this time around, especially since they kind of watched what happened with Devin Bush. So we'll see what happens there. But as far as Mitchell goes, you're seeing him solidly in the top 15 to 18 now. So maybe that's like a Fuaga type situation where if you really love him, you go get him. But I think if they're going to trade up, it's probably going to be for an offensive tackle.
I feel you on that. And just to clarify, it was for their first at 20, their second at 52, and a 2020 third round pick. So, yeah. I mean, that's serious capital to give up. And that's another reason why Devin Bush was just such a disappointment, all the effort they put in to get the guy who they hoped would be the linebacker of the future for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But when we're going to take a break, when we come back, I want to talk to Ray about the players that they have visited and why this could be a big week that's going to expand our view as far as what we know about the Steelers and who they're focusing on in the early parts of this draft process. All that here and more in the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Ray Fittipaldo. But first, I want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. The reason I call it best bar in all of Pittsburgh, because if you love beer, there's no better place that gives you all the different options that you can want. You love sours, you love IPAs, you love stouts, you love summer beers, you love winter beers in the summer, whatever your flavor is, Mike's Beer Bar has got it, because they have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local Pittsburgh beers are available on tap, and they're always cycling new ones in and out so that you can always get new experience from all the microbreweries, craft breweries in this great area, because that is, it is really huge in the Pittsburgh area what's going on right now with all the different beers being made all the time. They also have over 20 televisions, so if you want to enjoy whatever sporting event, and now that the Pirates are back, are coming back in town, you can go there and enjoy it before a Pirates game, after a Pirates game, during a Pirates game, if you want to just chill in there, or you know, catch an away game there, while also catching all the great action in the NHL, NBA, college basketball. Both the men's and women's tournaments have been exciting, and the best place to catch it all is at Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. They also have amazing food like their steak on a stone. So go to Mike's Beer Bar today, and when you get there, tell them Chris sent you. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Ray Fittipaldo, talking on all things Steelers here. Ray, let's look at the players that the Steelers have brought in for their top 30 visits. Now, to be clear, top 30 visits basically are like, you know, the guys that the Steelers bring on official visits to their facility. They invite, you know, NFL draft prospects to come and see things here. There are players who will be added to this list that won't count toward those top 30 visits. Like I reported that Matt Gonsalves, the Pitt offensive tackle, he'll be visiting the Steelers on April 3rd this week, but he's a local prospect, so he does not count towards those 30 players. MJ Devonshire also among those players that will visit with the Steelers and not count towards that. But as far as the players who do count towards that aren't from the Pittsburgh area here, Ray, what do the early top 30 visits tell you about the Steelers' priorities right now in this draft class?
Yeah, one other note before we get on to that. Guys who played in the City League or WPIAL, yes, do not count against that. And I also believe any West Virginia prospects. There's a certain mile radius involved there. Might be 75 miles. So if you attend West Virginia, you also do not. That's also referred to as a local visit and does not.
Hello, count. Zach Frazier.
Yes. We haven't heard that yet, but it could happen. And we assume it will at some point. But getting on to what it tells us so far. So, Chris, what, 6 or 7 visitors so far? I say this every year. The Steelers don't try to disguise you know, what their intentions are on draft day with their top 30 visits. They don't try to throw anyone off the scent. So far, they've brought in 3 tackles. They've brought in 3 receivers, and they've brought in a defensive end and Darius Robinson. And all 3 of those positions are big needs right now. So when you look at it, I think everyone assumes, you know, offensive line, whether a tackle or a center, is going to be a first-round pick. And then we've talked about it pretty much throughout this draft process, pre-draft process, that the receiver is so there's so much depth to that class that you could wait until the second or even third round where they have 2 picks where you might be able to pick up a starting caliber receiver. So I'm sure we'll see more of the same. You're going to see some centers come in, obviously, but I think you'll see centers, tackles, receivers, corners, and defensive ends. You know, if they do 30 visits, Chris, I bet you 20 are at those 5 positions.
I feel you on that. It makes a lot of sense. You go get your positions of need. You get to talk to players. And part of this also is, I think, the important part of the process to get to know guys more personally. Like the Steelers, I think a big part of this draft process isn't just seeing how good these guys, like they're not just measuring these guys for like how they played on their tape, how they did at the combine, all the athletic parts of it. They want to know if they're getting a guy that's going to fit into their locker room. And especially when it comes to offensive players, I really think there's a big part of this that's about like, hey, like, you know, we just had an upheaval of the quarterback situation. You know, the Steelers have not had really an offensive leader since Ben Roethlisberger's retired. They need, and you know, David DeCastro, Marquise Pouncey, all of them became gone within a year of each other. And that was just on the heels of guys like Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown leaving the organization. So you look at that and just the lack of opportunity the Steelers had for passing down the torch to this new crew of offensive guys. You know, Najee Harris only had a year with Ben Roethlisberger. So did Pat Freiermuth. This whole offensive line is brand spanking new. So like, the Steelers haven't had a chance to kind of have the succession plan that they did on the defensive line or on the defense in total. Like, you know, Cam Hayward, he knew Troy Polamalu, James Harrison, that crew, and he could take what he learned from them and pass it down and keep it up. And that's how, and then that went on to the crew of like Ryan Shazier and Stephon Tuitt. And even when those guys were gone, TJ Watt, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Alex Highsmith, and now you bring in a guy like Patrick Queen that can add to that mix. So the defense never really lost a stride. And you can look at the numbers over the years. The defense has carried over from, you know, they're not, you know, ranking number one right now, but they're ranking in the top 10 in major categories. The offense, not as much. And that's kind of where I think that's also part of this top 30 business is they want to get, hey, like, not only do we want to get guys that are talented, we want to know, are you going to be a person that like the buck stops with you? Are you going to be a person that can grow into a leader and be the face? That's what they hoped Kenny Pickett would be before he, you know, asked to be traded away. So I think that's a huge part of this process that people, when you see top 30 visits, it means they do like your talent, but they want to see, are you the kind of guy that's going to add to the locker room environment?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, offensive linemen a lot of times are natural quiet leaders, follow by example type guys. Obviously, quarterbacks are, you know, on a different level there. But even like in a non-leadership position, like a receiver, Chris, okay, let's see. Do you have diva-like qualities or maybe are you more of the best example I can think of is, you know, not with his talent, but are you more like Larry Fitzgerald than, you know, some of these other guys who constantly whine and complain about their role? So I know it's hard to find Larry Fitzgerald type personalities, but there are guys out there like that. I mean, Hines Ward didn't care what his role was. The block, he blocked. You asked him to throw a touchdown pass in a Super Bowl, he threw a touchdown pass in a Super Bowl. And he also had, what, you know, 10,000 yards or, you know, whatever it was. So there are those types of guys out there. I think you have to work a little bit harder because they're fewer and far between nowadays. But that's also part of it as well.
Certainly. Let's talk about the receiver position for a little bit here. At least in the top 30 visits, I believe that they have Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina, Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky. And, you know, again, we're expecting this list to probably grow significantly this week. Now that owners' meetings are done, they're back and they get a chance to look at things. Who are some guys that you think that they are going to bring in? You know, we know who they visited at the draft, Senior Bowl, and like, you know, which pro days Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan have been to so far. Are there anyone you particularly have your eye on as like, I expect this person to be a major target at the receiver position?
Yeah, I mean, all those, I would expect Roman Wilson to come in. They've had their eye on him since the Senior Bowl, so we'll see if that happens. I, you know, a lot of times they get to visit with these guys so extensively in Indiana Mobile that sometimes they feel like they don't have to have them in for a visit, too. So, you know, J.C. Latham is another guy, Chris, who's probably in that 15 to 20 range. He might be there. I think he's one of the best offensive line prospects. I think maybe – you know, he'll be a guy who comes in. I'd be surprised if all three of the top centers don't make their way here, to be honest with you. Pat Meyer was at the Oregon Pro Day for Jackson Powers Johnson. Arthur Smith was at Duke for Graham Barton. And I'm sure the Steelers had people at the Big 12 Pro Day for Zach Frazier too. And, you know, the Big 12 Pro Day was probably more important for Frazier than almost any other player just because he's coming off that fractured leg and he wasn't able to do much, really couldn't do anything at the Senior Bowl and then just was a limited tester at the combine. So, you know, I think all three of those centers will probably make their way to Pittsburgh as well.
As far as a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson, one thing that some people point out is that the Steelers rarely draft guys that are like out in the western part of the country. Like you look in, at least in the early part of the draft, you know, you can't stop it from being like, Alameda Te'amu was, you know, from Washington. But first round guys, the last time they drafted a guy that wasn't like from the East or at least the Midwest was David DeCastro out of Stanford. And like that was 2012. And you go back even further beyond that, you know, you look throughout the years, it's that's not something that, that they often do. That the last guy they drafted before him in the West Coast was Troy Polamalu. And so, like, that's at least in the first round. Do you think that that factors in at all into, like, decision-making here? Or is that just a, you know, like, hey, like, the Steelers, it's just the needs often line up with a lot of the bigger schools in the SEC and the Big Ten, yeah, and less so the Pac-12 sometimes?
Yeah, I wouldn't pay all that much attention to it, Chris, just because I know that this is a new regime and they're doing things differently than what the previous regime did. And, you know, if you look at it, too, the first-round picks over the years, you're right. A lot of those guys have been, you know, guys on the East Coast or guys that the Steelers are familiar with their Big Ten ties. So what's that stat out there? You might be familiar with it, the Steelers. If Tomlin and the GM attend your pro day, you know, how many years in a row is it? I kind of throw that out the window. I remember when I wrote a profile on Andy Weidel when he first got the job. I think Daniel Jeremiah told me the story. They both worked for the Ravens at the time, and Andy was pounding his fist on the table for Haloti Ngata, the big nose tackle who I think was drafted in the top 10 by the Ravens. Yeah. And he went to bat for him. He ended up being a top 10 pick, and, you know, he anchored their defense for how many years. And listen, I don't know. Ozzie Newsome could have gone to that pro day. I don't know how the Ravens do it, but he's a West Coast guy. I know for a fact, I think it was the LA trip this year, Andy went out there for a week before the Rams game and spent a lot of time on the West Coast. So I know people like to cite, you know, the Tomlin and, you know, the pro day visit or the, yeah, the pro day visits and all that stuff. But if we've learned anything in the last 2 years, it's that Andy and Omar are not going to follow the path that Kevin Colbert necessarily did. They're going to do things their own way. So I wouldn't pay too much attention to that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, yeah, you were right. Haloti Ngata, a two-time first-team All-Pro guy, five-time Pro Bowler. They drafted him 12th overall. So clearly, they value going out of the, you know, out of the ordinary there, out to Oregon to get a Haloti Ngata in Baltimore. I would not be shocked if the Steelers considered something like that. But hey, there's a lot of other draft prospects to examine, and we'll keep examining them here with our big board analysis, with our mock drafts. Ray's got one coming out later this week that we urge you to keep an eye on to see who he's looking at for the Steelers at this point of the draft process, early April. Again, the first day of the draft is April 25th. A reminder, we'll be at Mike's Beer Bar, by the way, for the draft, a live show with me, myself, Adam Bittner. I think Jason Mackey will be able to be there, maybe Paul Zeiss, but it's going to be a Post-Gazette show. You can join us there as we're covering the first and second days of the draft on April 25th and April 26th there at Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When we come back, we talked a lot about the Steelers' needs, but let's look at their strongest points position-wise on their depth chart that may not need to be addressed in the draft, or do they? We'll address that here on the North Shore Drive podcast. From the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Ray Filippato. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Chris Carter, Ray Filippato, talking all things Steelers. Ray, we've talked a lot about their needs: corner, offensive tackle, center, wide receiver. There's a lot of those needs. We can keep going. We can keep going over those, but what are the positions you feel like the Steelers are strongest at that they can afford to just let slip on by this year as far as the talent evaluation for guys? You know, some people have brought up, like, what if Brock Bowers falls to 20? Not that that's going to happen. But, you know, I look at tight end as one of the positions that they're strongest at. What are other positions that you think that most likely, because of their strengths right now, they don't need to worry about?
Yeah, I would say three. I think you're right. Tight end certainly is one of them. Running backs is another. That's a tremendous 1-2 punch that you have with Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. And then I think we all assume that Cordarrelle Patterson is going to be that de facto number three, just because he's going to be on the 45-man game day roster because of his kick return abilities. So they're set there. And then I would say outside linebacker. And I think what a difference a year makes. We were all talking about how they lacked depth at outside linebacker last year after what happened with T.J. Watt, you know, Malik Reed, Jameer Jones. Those guys aren't here anymore, but Nick Herbig was an impact player, fourth-round pick out of last year's class. Marcus Golden was what, a late June signing, I think. I think he signed like during minicamp or something, Chris. And he had four sacks and was really solid. Now, listen, Golden is still a free agent, so they still have to get a number four there. But I don't know about you. I wouldn't be surprised if Marcus Golden comes back after the draft. I mean, he's going to be 33 years old. You know, I think they can wait to get their number four outside linebacker. So, yeah, it's interesting as you look at this draft process that's coming up. I think there are some positions where they just don't have to address at all. You know, they could in the later rounds, but I think certainly on the first 2 days of the draft, I don't think you'll see them taking an outside back or a tight end or a running back.
Let's take a quick look here at that fourth edge rusher spot. You mentioned Marcus Golden. He did a good job. Like he was solid when called upon. He was good in rotation, and like, you know, unlike Melvin Ingram, he wasn't a guy who was complaining when he wasn't getting snaps. Right. But there's another guy out there in free agency that has some history with the Steelers. One Bud Dupree, who is currently a free agent. You know, he's 31. You know, he's not 33. Now, he does have an injury history with him. It's, you know, he's tacked on over the years. Do you see a potential reunion there of sorts? Because also Bud Dupree, you know, not that he would work with Arthur Smith, but he was with the Falcons last year. So there's at least another connection there. Do you see that potential reunion there as a possibility as maybe one of those, you know, OTA minicamp type of additions?
Yeah, the way I look at it, Chris, is it worked so well with Golden last year. Why not go back to it? Now, listen, if, you know, I know he played pretty much on the vet minimum last year. So if he wants more money and they can't come to terms, then, yeah, a guy like Dupree would come into play. I know Dupree took a visit last March or last April to the Steelers. I know Cam Hayward had lunch with him at the cafeteria down there, and it just didn't work out. Maybe, you know, I don't know what the specifics were with Atlanta's contract, but I got the feeling that he made more money going down there. So, yeah, I think if it doesn't work out with Golden, they could possibly go to Dupree. But when I look at it, Golden was a great fit in the locker room, productive on the field. Yeah, he's 33, but doing another one-year deal, what's the harm in that?
No, I agree with that. And Bud Dupree, you know, he only made like $2.9 million against the cap for the Falcons last year in a one-year deal. But I think part of it might have been also he felt like he still wanted to start in the NFL. He started 16 games for the Falcons last year. So
yeah, that's not going to happen in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
No, it's not. You're not taking Alex Highsmith or TJ Watt's job. So, like, I think that might have been the situation. It's like, hey, I still got some stuff there. So if he still wants to be a starter, yeah, that's still not going to happen. But if he's, you know, at 31 years old, that he'll be probably when the season gets started, you know, you look at that, maybe he is like, you know what, I'm fine with that. I can be part of a rotation. But either way, like you said, if Marcus Golden's sitting there, why not go get the guy? Because he worked out for them last year. The running back situation, I agree with you. That's another one that they don't have to really look too hard at. Najee Harris is Najee Harris. Jaylen Warren's a great number two option. And now you even add Cordero Patterson to the mix. Right? I'm not sure if we've got a chance to talk about it with just me and you on this show because of when it happened. But to me, Cordero Patterson, everyone's looking at the new kickoff rule and saying, oh, yeah, kickoff. And he's got all this history at the kickoffs. And absolutely, that's a factor in it. But I kind of like the idea of having Patterson to flex around in Arthur Smith's offense, that this gives you a little bit more options to give you, hey, here's some two running back looks that can flex into passing options, because Patterson was a wide receiver who became a running back / wide receiver.
Yeah, listen, you're always looking to create mismatches if you're an offensive coordinator. So Arthur Smith is going to have all kinds of different personnel packages. He's going to have the ability to go big with Darnell Washington and two tight ends, possibly even three tight ends. And then he'll have options to go small. You know, if Patterson and say, Calvin Austin is still on the roster, he could do a lot with mismatches there. So he can get defensive coordinators into position where he matches personnel, and then he could work mismatches off that. I fully expect him to take advantage of that. To be honest with you, I don't think Matt Canada did that enough. Matt Canada was like, here, this is the play we're going to run. You guys try to stop it. And he really wasn't creative at all in trying to, take advantage of, some of the mismatches that were potentially there for the Steelers. So, Patterson's a nice player. He breaks tackles. He's been productive, even though he's 33 years old. So, yeah, I mean, for the price of his signing, you know, given the fact that the kickoff return role is going to be different this year, and there's going to be an added emphasis there to get that guy as your number three. I think that's a win-win all around.
I'm right with you there. I want to ask you real quick before we get out of here about tight end. Tight end, you know, looking at it, it looks solid, right? Pat Freiermuth is, you know, a number one tight end that people are talking about could be a top 10 tight end. Maybe he already is a top 10 end, but maybe being like, you know, in that top five conversation if the Steelers offense just isn't terrible this year. Darnell Washington, you know, I think was very serviceable in a lot of respects last year. Could he grow into more this year? And then you have Connor Hayward, who can be flexed all around the field, kind of one of those flexible, you know, mismatch guys that you could get in some situations here. But they haven't signed Pat Freiermuth to an extension yet, and he might be expensive, and they might have some different opinions as far as how they want to put their money in the future parts of this, you know, in to keep developing this roster, the Steelers. Do you foresee Pat Freiermuth definitely being extension, or is this sneakily a position the Steelers need to keep an eye on to maybe get a replacement for him in the next year or two?
Well, I mean, these extensions, they usually come in August. I think more recently with Omar, they've come in June. I think Minka, his extension was done around minicamp or so. So, you know, I wouldn't put too much stock into the fact that they haven't done it yet. We're just, you know, April 1st today, Chris. So they're focused on the draft now, and then we'll get to, you know, Freiermuth's extension later. I think he's a guy that's going to get done. If you go back to Russell Wilson's press conference, he was part of the leadership group that went to dinner with James Harrison and Cam Hayward. And, you know, I know Connor Hayward was there too. So I think that'll get done. You know, he's not going to break the bank either. I think if you can get him for 12, 13 million a year on an extension, I think that'll be a win for both sides. So assuming that will get done, you know, I think you're right. I you know, maybe you draft a day three tight end, maybe someone to push Connor Hayward. You know, we all know that Darnell Washington has some knee issues. So maybe you kind of want to get somebody in there that you could develop. And we always forget about Rodney Williams. But Rodney Williams was an excellent special teams player.
Very good point.
And he actually played a lot. Well, not a lot. He actually played 10 or 15 snaps a game, a few games, and he was used primarily as a blocker. So you know, I do think that's one position where they probably don't have to draft one, but if they do, it'll probably be day three or later.
Absolutely. He's Ray Fittipaldi of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We'll have our team around the Steelers facility all week long, keep you up to date with all the new top 30 visits as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft. Be on the lookout for Ray's mock draft coming out later this week, as well as our continued analysis of the Pittsburgh Steelers and all things Pittsburgh sports here. The Pirates have started the season 4-0 with Jason Mackey. While he has just finished his beat duties, Noah Hiles, Andrew Destin will be on that all week long. So do be sure to be keep up with them, as well as the Penguins and all things Pitt. Even though the Pitt basketball out of the tournament, they're making big moves there. Myself and Abby Schnabel are on the case there, and also spring football practices are well underway. All that can be found at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, post-gazette.com for all our written work. Find us on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you like enjoyed this episode, as well as our Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast and all the daily video and audio content that comes from all of our different writers. We're back Wednesday with more here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.